All right. So I'm Rick Hansen, and this is the October 26th, right, 2011. And I want to talk with you tonight about feeding the wolf of love. So as a way to get into this topic, I want to share with you a story that you may well have heard or read elsewhere. The version I heard in this Native American teaching story is that an elder grandmother was asked toward the end of her life how she had become so loved, so respected, and so wise. And she paused to reflect and then replied, "Well, I think it's because I happen to know that there are two wolves in my heart, one of love and one of hate. And I know that everything depends on which one I feed each day." Even now, the umpteenth time I've thought of that story or told it or written it, it touches my heart. You know? Who among us does not have both wolves in the heart? I have both of them, including the not so popular in Buddhist or meditative or personal growth or New Age circles, the wolf of hate. I think there are an extremely small number of very rare beings who I think truly were not born with the wolf of hate. You know, they're born saints. But most of us, me included, have both wolves in our heart. We have them because we evolved them. Because our ancestors, who lived primarily in small bands over millions of years, and when I say ancestors, I trace it back over, you know, the last 150,000 years or so of modern humans, the last 2.5 million years or so of tool manufacturing hominids, and the last 40 million years or so of primates, reaching even further back into 200 million years or so of mammal evolution. And certainly from primates forward, our ancestors lived in bands that bred mainly inside the band and also competed, often intensely, with other bands for scarce resources. In a context in which, just to use hunter-gatherer humans as an example, there was a lot of violence between bands. For example, it's estimated that roughly 1 in 100 males born in the 20th century died due to warfare, 1%. It's a lot. On the other hand, it's estimated that in a typical hunter-gatherer band, with some exceptions, but a typical hunter-gatherer band, based on evidence from hunter-gatherer bands today, as well as in the recent past, as well as archaeological records going further back, that the death rate due to violence between bands for males was actually around 12 to 15%, at least 12 times greater. Not the shock and awe of modern warfare, but actually a much higher mortality rate. So genes that promoted cooperation inside the band got passed on. Thus, the basis in biological evolution for the wolf of love, the basis for the development of parent-child bonding, mate bonding, friendship, altruism, kindness, and the formation of the village it takes to raise a child. On the other hand, it's also the case that genes that promoted the fear and anger and violence and murder toward them also promoted survival and were passed on. In fact, the wolf of love supported the wolf of hate because bands that were better at cooperating internally were better at aggressing externally. And the wolf of hate fed the wolf of love because by being able to protect this band from them who are coming at us, right, we can keep our kids alive. The wolf of love and the wolf of hate thus co-evolved in some fundamental and very poignant way. The wolf of hate is the midwife of the wolf of love, and vice versa. The wolf of hate and the wolf of love are stitched into human DNA. What are we going to do? We cannot kill the wolf of hate, because to hate the wolf of hate feeds the wolf of hate. What we can do, though, is we can restrain the wolf of hate and put it on a diet. and meanwhile, feed the wolf of love. So I'd like to speak about some ways to put the wolf of hate on a diet. Sometimes I think of the word starve, but that seems a little too hateful. I'm looking for a verb that means to impose a diet or something like that. But anyway, we're going to predicate that wolf of hate, right? Or something like that. But anyway, and definitely focus on how to feed the wolf of love. So to the first point, briefly, four ways to restrain the wolf of hate and put it on a diet. Because, as a sidebar, I think there's a place for the wolf of hate. There's a place for a certain well-regulated quality of fierceness, what Julia Butterfly Hill, the woman who sat in the tree for 2 years, Luna, to protect it, speaks of as fierce compassion. Other people use that phrase as well. I think, you know, the kind of strength, the fire to speak truth to power, to stick up for what's right, to protect those things we care about, whether it's a grove of trees or a family member or the planet's carbon load altogether. You know, there's a place for that. There's a place for it in some rough and tumble play. Okay, but that said, the wolf of hate, particularly in a species at this point with 7 billion people crowded together on the planet who cannot live in the ways that hunter-gatherer bands lived, which actually didn't have that much contact with each other, and often when they did, it was pretty intense. You know, we need to restrain this wolf of hate, which is now armed with nuclear weapons. Okay, how do we do it? Four things just to mention right off the top that come from the Buddha's teachings in a lot of ways. The first is to really cool the fires, because when we get fired up, frustrated, disappointed, stressed, that gets the wolf of hate looking around for something to bite. Okay. So in general, not suppressing the fires, but cooling the fires can help us, you know, manage the wolf of hate. We find ourselves getting irritated, getting frustrated, getting snarky, getting exasperated, let alone irritated, annoyed, angry, enraged. You know, we feel the fire burning, the fire of anger. Exhale. Do what Grandma said. Take some big breaths, honey. Okay? Cool those fires. One. Two, really be thoughtful about the sense of being threatened, because the very first emotion was fear. Rule one in the wild is, you know, eat lunch today. Don't be lunch today. So we're very, very vulnerable to fear and very vulnerable to feeling that it's threat level orange when it's really threat level yellow or maybe even green. You know, we tend to overestimate our appraisals of threat out there. You know, you can see it at the local level of, you know, how big a deal it is that somebody cut you off on the freeway or, you know, or was snippy at home or, you know, rattled some saber far away. I think it's important to deal with the real tigers that exist out there locally and distantly. That said, we're primed generically to overestimate threats. Be very careful about fear. Mother Nature is whispering in our ear all the time, be afraid, be very afraid, like worm tongue. And most of that is a lie. That's the second thing. The third way to restrain the wolf of hate is to really practice a moral stance of non-harming. This fundamentally. We may need to restrain others. We may need to have a police department, but we don't organize around harming, right? We don't try to harm others. We don't get caught up in ill will. We don't do that to other people. It's a fundamental moral stance. It's the essence of morality across all traditions, religiously as well as secular traditions of ethics, non-harming. We really feel it in ourselves. We don't want to hurt another person. We don't want to kill a mosquito. We don't want to harm species that are dying, you know, as we sit here. We don't want to harm them. And then last, teaching of the Buddha that's relevant here that I'll just mention. There are probably more, but I'm only doing four right now because I'm going to focus on feeding the wolf of love, is to regard our reactions and even events. So we're regarding both what happens in the mind and also, you know, what happens out there in the world. We're regarding that as fundamentally empty in the Buddhist technical sense of transient, arising interdependently, and lacking an innate substance or essence. In other words, we're regarding our emotional reactions, our thoughts, our views, our beliefs, our irritation, our annoyance, what have you, our fears, we're regarding that as phenomenologically empty. In other words, the phenomenology of experience is foamy. It's cloud-like rather than brick-like. And we're regarding things that are material as ontologically empty, their actual nature in reality, as empty of weightiness. That doesn't mean we act like it's not real. It doesn't mean that we don't think that drunk drivers speeding through intersections should need to be regulated. But in a very deep and ultimate way, when we start regarding phenomena in more of this fluid sense, as processes, as arising due to all kinds of causes, you know, it takes us to a wider view. And it calms down the wolf of hate, which is driven in part by the neurology of the brain, which fastens on threat as the single tile in the mosaic. It ignores everything else. When we see the emptiness of things, the fluidity of things, the web-like nature of things, that takes us to the bigger view. Right? And when we're in the bigger view, that cools down and restrains the wolf of hate. On to feeding the wolf of love. So before I do any of this, I'll say that I think the wolf of love is naturally much stronger and bigger than the wolf of hate. The wolf of hate gets a lot of action, gets a lot of news. Fear typically trumps hope. Defense typically trumps nurturance. That's one reason why there's a kind of strong movement in bands and also in nations altogether that can be easily manipulated by playing on fear to justify strong authoritarian leadership of one kind or another in the family, in a company, in a nation. And yet, we are surrounded every day by 10,000 acts of the wolf of love. Little bits of cooperation, little bits of generosity, little bits of restraint, non-harming. We notice the harms that are done, we don't notice the harms that are restrained. We don't notice the quiet action of the wolf of love, which often expresses itself through inaction, omission, restraint, letting be, letting pass. Right? So have faith in the power of the wolf of love. Okay. So some ways to feed the wolf of love, right? One way, I'll name five, is to really take in the felt sense of being cared about. In other words, feel loved. One way to feed the wolf of love inside one's heart is to let oneself feel liked, included, seen, understood, valued, respected, appreciated, part of the group, and even cherished and loved. That feeds that wolf of love inside and makes it stronger. And as studies have shown, if you, in effect, warm up the neural circuits, the attachment circuits, by taking in the felt sense of being cared about, that primes them to then flow out caring toward others. It's a wonderful and important practice. Deeply important to us, as you may have heard me say, exile was a death sentence in the Serengeti. It's deeply important to us to feel loved, to feel cared about, to feel seen, to feel attached, to feel included. So look for the ways that that is the case, even if it's not the whole enchilada, all right? Even if it's just a slice of the pie, you know, it's not the ultimate romantic soulmate relationship one may long for, and yet, in its own right, there is genuine liking and caring, inclusion, respecting, appreciating, and maybe love. Okay. Second, really steep in empathy for others, because what wakes the wolf of hate up is the division between us and them, that categorization, that dualistic distinction, us and them. There are distinctions between us and them. There's a place for that, but that's a yellow flag condition. It's a caution flag condition. And empathy is what helps us see through that distinction, to tune into them and realize that them over there is actually like us. So empathy, the cultivation of empathy, the seeing also through empathy of the good in others. They may be expressing that good in problematic ways, maybe illegal ways, maybe awful ways, but deep down, the intentions are good. Deep down, there's a little kid inside that jerk, quote unquote jerk, you know? Deep down, there's a being. There's someone who suffers. There's someone who will die, who worries about dying, who has loved ones who have died or will die, you know? So we see that, and that strengthens our wolf of love. Just that seeing, just that recognition. Third, deliberately cultivate qualities of loving kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy for the welfare of other people. In other words, happiness at the good fortune of others. I had a spiritual teacher for quite some time, Adida, Dafrijan, known by a variety of names, Lavananda, and he was basically talking with people one time, and he essentially talked about the muscle of the heart. You know, in other words, strengthening that muscle of the heart through cultivation practices, like doing loving kindness practice in some formal way or informal way, you know, giving over to love more and more, you know, cultivating that in our heart. Interestingly, studies have shown that as people do cultivate those qualities of compassion, which is the wish that others not suffer, or beings not suffer, including oneself, as people cultivate compassion or cultivate kindness, which is the wish that others or that beings, including oneself, be happy, as they do that, they actually, in effect, prime the motor circuits in the brain so that in addition to feeling and caring about the suffering of others, there's a movement to help. Right? We may not be able to express that movement. We may not be able to save that child. We've seen a news photograph of people who are hungry in Darfur or Somalia, what have you. But at least we can feel the wish to help and act accordingly. So that's the third thing, to cultivate that quality. Right? The fourth thing that I think really feeds the wolf of love is to recognize the good that's possible in the world we could make together. It's so easy to lose heart and lose hope for all kinds of reasons, including doom and gloom messages, you know, the memes that, frankly, you know, ruling elites of all kinds throughout history have kind of promulgated that if there's nothing you could do and, you know, tune in, you know, to the circus or the bread and leave it be. Also, it's easy to feel disheartened or to narrow our own view. It's a act that's both personal and political, to see the good in the world that can be and to not lose faith in that possibility, and to see the possibilities in the world we can truly make together. That feeds the wolf of love. That feeds the wolf of love. And then last, take action. You know, the wolf of love needs to work its muscles. Take it for a jog. In other words, you know, action. Simple things like saying hello to people on the street, which seems almost taboo in the culture here. Strangers on the street, just hi as you walk by. You know, shaking hands, making contact, touching people, doing little things, little moments of friendliness, taking an extra 2 seconds in eye contact or an extra 30 seconds in a conversation, looking for ways to connect with people, to, you know, work together in some way or to be together, invite people for dinner, take an extra, you know, buy them a cup of coffee, whatever. All these ways that are so small and so easy to do, as well as larger ways to join together with other people in cooperation. It's really interesting that studies have shown that one of the things that most undoes most helps heal long-standing us-them divides, ethnic, religious divides, is to have everyday contact with them in daily life. Do business with them, have them be one's customers, work for them, have your kids go to school with their them kids, whatever it is, you know, be on the same soccer team. You know, that tends to really, really ease those divisions. As an example of, you know, cooperating together, taking action together. Okay. And then to finish, and then I'll open it up for discussion here. You know, I think one last thing I would just offer that relates to the wolf of love is to truly let yourself kind of breach what many corners of the mind is in a way the last taboo. Let yourself know that you truly are a good person. You know, letting oneself know that feeds the wolf of love. You know, having faith in one's own goodness, one's good intentions, you know, not a perfect person, no halo needed, but knowing you are a good person really helps feed the wolf of love. You know, so let's have heart, let's have hope, you know, and let's hold on to each other. Comments or questions?
Well, first, thank you for your talk tonight. An analogy that I really connected with, and it felt very real. It's the reality of who we are. When you were talking about the wolf of hate, what occurred to me, I made a connection after a bit with the Four Noble Truths and craving. That somehow the wolf of hate is very much tied with unbridled craving, which is kind of obviously a cornerstone of Buddha's teaching, that we have this and how to dispel it. But there was a connection. I just wondered if you could.
I think you've said it beautifully there, Tom. And it is interesting. What does the wolf of hate crave? It craves protection, and it when it gets fired up, you know, it craves the resolution of its anger. You know, you're right. There's a real intensity there, a positionality. The wolf of love doesn't tend to do that so much. Now, the wolf of hate sometimes masquerades as the wolf of love. And that's where you see things like envy or jealousy or possessiveness, you know, or manipulative clinging. It's about territoriality and possessive. If it's about territoriality and possessiveness, it's about the wolf of hate in some ways.
Yeah. Where does craving love fit
in? Well, I think, you know, the analogy starts breaking down a little bit. I think in my way of thinking of it, people can really crave love. And I can feel it in myself, a craving for love that doesn't have anger or fear in it. It does have urgency and need and drivenness. And by craving, it feels like it's problematic. You know, everything collapses to the craving. You know, gotta get there. And, you know, sometimes for a short period of time, I think particularly when people are young, there's a place for that. It's healthy for the toddler to crave the secure base of the mother's lap, you know, when she's got an owie. All right. That's helpful. But I think that a lot of things that are appropriate either when we're young or served their function 100,000 years ago or 10 million years ago, you know, today are to be managed and regulated and worked with. You know. The other thing I'll say is that I think that paradoxically, as we truly feed the wolf of love, and my first suggestion of five for how to really do this is to take in the food. When you fulfill the craving, which is a yellow flag condition at best, take that food in so you don't need to crave it tomorrow. as this same teacher Adidas said, once a philosopher, twice a pervert. So in other words, what I mean by that, if you're going to enact the craving, all right, but when you get the message, hang up the phone, take it in. I mean, you didn't see what I'm kind of, okay, good. Other people? And I want to end close to on time, please.
Yeah, I've been practicing recently, aspiring to have actions to do, you know, as a faith and hope of love. Yeah. I've been practicing recently just like naming people and just remembering their names and just saying it back to them. And that, you'd be surprised how much that means to someone.
That's great.
Really heard and like, wow, you're really acknowledging that I'm here communicating with you. And like, I don't know, it's just, I think it's something that everyone should really try.
Beautiful, thank you. I'll take that on board myself to do better at that. Thank you. Great, yeah, please.
One of the things that I've recently come to appreciate is that the first sign of life in the fetus is the heartbeat. And it's the divine that beats our heart. We don't have to think about our heart. We don't have to say, heart's beat up, I'm going to go up the stairs or whatever. That's all taken care of, and it's an a priority of unconditional love. And no matter what we do or say, that heart will still beat unless we, you know, stop it and act of violence. And getting in touch with that reality we have within us, that reminder. Jesus said the kingdom of God is within you.
Right. And you can sense it perhaps with that, you know, heartbeat anytime you can tune into it. Great, thank you. How about in the back there, man and woman in front of him, great.
I'm kind of thrilled that you're talking about this subject today. And the reason why is I work for a non-profit and we go into schools and we're addressing school bullying.
Thank you, by the way, for your work, yeah.
All of our program is based on this story.
Really?
And every training we've done, we train thousands of teachers and parents. We start with this story.
Yeah.
And the whole of our program collaboration story, and the little bit that I want to add on here today is the way that as adults we look at children and sometimes see them just as the wolf of hatred. Mm. And there's a way that we blind ourselves to the fact that in everyone, as the story says, there's a wolf of love, or we call it a wolf of kindness.
Yeah.
And that trend across the United States has led to a very punitive stance to the children who are bullying. And that's actually caused more corrosion and more problems and more of a sense of otherness.
Right. We don't diet the wolf of hate by hating the wolf of hate. Exactly.
The way that we're working with schools and training them to work with their students is to see that wolf of kindness and to solve bullying by tapping into the basic empathy that exists, as we know, from babies upwards.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
What's the name of the organization?
No Bully.
No Bully?
Yeah.
So does it have a website?
Yeah, nobully.com. I'll give you the
Great.
The link.
Getting it for the record,
yes.
Too. Nobully.com. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. All right. That vows. All right. Beautiful. Yeah.
In the realm of taking action and also being kindness, I heard some wisdom once that if you don't like somebody, buy them a present.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I'll just actually add to the group conversation something to offer to you that is real for me and was recently very real for me is the recognition that you're a loving person. Just that. Just really, wow, I am a loving person. Not perfect, could improve, and I am a loving person. So again, that you might think of that as a kind of practice here. Oh, other people?
Over here.
Beautiful, yeah.
I think going back to the craving for love, you know, because a lot of times it's easier to feel like the need for love, like the wolf of love is hungry.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Which
yeah.
kind of sort of often comes out like, you know, the wolf of, you know, hatred.
Right.
That then one of the practices that I've been using is if I kind of feel that craving, what am I really craving? And let myself know what that want is, you know, what that love would look like, what it would feel like, what it would taste like, smell like, getting it. But of course, once you really let yourself imagine what you're wanting to have, then you're getting it. Right? You're actually connecting with that. That beats the wolf of love.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, then you have that. Once you're giving it to yourself, then it actually beats the wolf of love.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you. Thank you.
Follow the longing to the source.
Yeah. Well, how about always trying to, you know, respect time and by 30 or so. How about one last person in the back there, and then we'll sit for maybe a minute.
I was thinking right along the lines of what you were saying, just about the wolf of hate, how it's connected with the wolf of love. And it's sort of that basic need being thwarted in some way. And to kind of like sense back through, you know, having this reaction, aversion, you know, and if you have a, you know, presence of mind to see what the need is underneath, you know, the wolf, you know, the hate feeling, and to try to, you know, feel what that is, seeing the wolf of hate being a thwarted need of the wolf of love.
So. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really, I think you're right. You know, the wolf of hate gets activated when people feel afraid or hurt. You know, and you're speaking to addressing whatever that underlying softer, more vulnerable, often younger, you know, wish is or longing or wound is, you know, that the wolf of hate's jumping up around. Yeah, exactly right. And that's really true. Yeah.
I think sedate is a good word.
Sedate. Sedate the wolf of hate. Well, it's got a rhythm to it. I kind of like that. Kind of hear that reggae beat going there, you know. So, but yeah, sedate the wolf of hate. That's cool.
Retire.
Retire? Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to be working on this. This will be great. Do you have one last word and then we'll sit for a minute? Oh, more than a word. Okay. For sure the last one.
I'm just kind of hearing and feeling into that actually there is a place where we need to feed the wolf of hate because it is starving and we have hated it. So we need to feed it a different diet.
Ah. Would you have a proposal or a...
Yeah, well, love.
Feed it love. That goes to his point about bullies. Yeah, love the wolf of hate. Wow. That's pretty cool, actually, to think about that.
Quite a meal.
Quite a meal. Okay. How about we just sort of hang out and sit for a minute or so? Ah. Love them to life. Anyway. Okay, so we'll sit. You might open to just the felt sense in your own body of what one kind or another of love feels like for you. Thank you for your practice. Mm-hmm.